And right across the border to us, to the south, North Dakota and Montana especially, on soybeans, why did farmers grow it? And that is a question that is asked many times. And the reason for that, I believe, is this. What were farmers told? Number one, it would be more nutritious. Number two, it would be a bigger yielder. Number three, less chemicals. And I think that last issue, less chemicals, is what caught the farmer's ear. Because like other places on the plains, we were using chemicals, insecticides, herbicides, pesticides by the hundreds of tons every year. Our land, our water, everything was becoming contaminated. We knew it was doing danger to our health, increased rates of breast cancer, prostate cancer, tumor cancer amongst farmers. So we knew something had to be causing this. So I think that last issue, less chemicals, is really why the farmers went for it. But what happened within 2 and 3 years? Number one, it was not more nutritious. The quality of GMO canola is way poorer than regular conventional canola. And one of the reasons for that is the fact that when you insert a gene into a plant, you disrupt the whole mechanism of that plant. So the quality is poor. And if you pay attention to the corporations' ads, all corporations that sell GMO, they never say nothing about quality. Number two, the yield is about at least 15% less. And even the United States Department of Agriculture has just come out about 2 months ago, even on soybeans, they have acknowledged it's a decreased yield of about 15%. But number three, worst of all, more increased use of chemicals from 3 to 5 to 6%. And why is that? It's because canola now has become a mutant. It has become a super weed. And maybe I should go into immediately, what is a super weed canola? A super weed canola is this. Monsanto was not the only company that was selling GMO canola. There were other companies. And within 2 years, the genes from two or three companies that were selling GMO canola were all in one regular canola plant, which now made it a super weed, and at least takes at least three chemicals now to try and control it and kill it. Now, it is not only in canola fields. You'd be hard-pressed to find one farmland in Western Canada in millions of acres that you would not find this new super weed. So even farmers that just grew wheat, oats, barley, also now have to use increased uses of more powerful chemicals to control this new super weed. And what that does is because some of these new chemicals and even older chemicals leave residue into the soil, it limits the types of crops you can grow the following year. So a lot of the farmer's choice is being taken away. Now, really, when they said, they also said to farmers in 1996, some other buzzwords, what we call it, that now we would always have sustainable agriculture. We'd now be able to feed a hungry world, and I'm sure you've heard these advertisements by these companies. But if we now have decreased yields, poorer quality, with the introduction of GMOs, we will increase starvation and hunger in the world because of lower production and poorer quality of grains. There's a lot more to the whole issue with the introduction of GMOs into any country in the world, and that is the issue of control, and you very seldom ever hear about that. And what do I mean by control? The control is right here. Monsanto's contract that they get farmers to sign. And in the new contract, which I now have a copy, there's another clause added. But I'll go through some of the clauses. Number one, you must always buy the seed from Monsanto. Number two, you cannot use your seed. You cannot trade with your neighbor. Number three, you must pay Monsanto each year a $15 per acre technology charge. Number four, you must always buy the chemicals from Monsanto. Number five, you must sign a non-disclosure statement. If you happen to commit some infraction of this contract, you can say nothing to the press, you can say nothing to your neighbor. Otherwise, they will fine you again. So it takes a farmer's freedom of speech and expression away. One of the last points I'd like to make is that also you must permit Monsanto's police force to come onto your land, look into your granaries, to check on to see on your crops or what you're growing, or to see if you violated this contract. And believe me, in Canada, they have hired former ex-Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And in our city of Saskatoon alone, last year they had 35 of these gene, we call them gene police. How do they do it in the U.S.? They hire Pinkerton Investigation Services to police their contract. So that is some of the things in the contract. Now, something else that has just been added to this contract is that if a farmer has a problem with any GMO seeds or doesn't produce like they advertise, you can no longer sue Monsanto. You have to give up your rights to sue Monsanto. You cannot take them to court. Now, I'd like to... How does Monsanto then police it? They advertise in their brochures, local papers or their own brochures or pamphlets, and it states here, if you think that your neighbor is violating Monsanto's contract or Monsanto's patent by growing GMO canola without a license, you should rat and inform on your neighbor. Now, what happens when Monsanto gets that information, if some neighbor or somebody does that? They immediately send out, and I've always found out from the experience that people have told me, they send two of their gene police to a farmer's home. And they'll go into a farmer's home or into his yard or whatever, and they'll say, we have this tip or rumor that you're growing Monsanto's GMO canola without a license, and if you don't come clean, we're going to lay a lawsuit and so on against you. And a farmer will say, no, I've never had nothing to do with you people, I never bought your seed. And they'll say, if you don't confess, we'll get you, we'll take you to court, and you won't have a farm left. Now, what happens after these gene police leave a farmer's home? And to me, as a former politician, I think that is one of the worst things that can happen to a society, is that because when these police leave, what do you think that farmer thinks, or his wife thinks? Who done this to me? Was it this neighbor, or that neighbor over here that has done this harm to me? So all of a sudden you got a suspicion of farmers not trusting one another. And believe me, my grandparents came over from the old country at the turn of the century, first to the United States and then to Canada. And farmers and people in rural areas had to work together in good times and bad times to build our infrastructures, our roads, our hospitals, our schools, and so on. Now through Monsanto's policy, you have the breakdown of our rural social fabric. And I think that is one of the worst things that could happen when farmers don't trust one another because of Monsanto's policies. It doesn't stop there. And I think it's important that I go into this because this is something you never hear about. But believe me, it's happening to farmers in Indiana as well as Saskatchewan or North Dakota. Here's a letter. And we don't know how many thousands of these letters have been sent out. And farmers call these extortion letters. And in this letter, it'll state, we have reason to believe that you might be growing Monsanto's GMO canola or GMO soybeans without a license. We estimate you have 100 acres, 200 acres, or 500 acres. Send us $100,000, $50,000, $250,000, and we may or may not take you to court or lay a lawsuit against you. Farmers have received letters on land that they haven't even had canola seeded to. Can you imagine the fear in a farmer when he gets a letter from a multi-billion dollar corporation, send us $50,000 or $30,000 or $100,000, and we may or may not take you to court? So it's a real new fear culture that has been established in the Midwest and on the prairies in Canada. It doesn't stop there. One last item is that if Monsanto's people or their police can't find a farmer at home, if they but they know his land locations, they'll use an airplane or a helicopter, and they'll use what we call Monsanto's Roundup Ready herbicide spray bombs, and they'll fly over a over a farmer's canola field. And normally our fields are about 160 acres square, and in the center of that field, they'll drop one of these spray bombs. And in a week's time or 10 days, after the chemical has had time to work or activate, they'll fly back over a farmer's field again, either with a helicopter or with a small plane. And they'll note, if a farmer's field where they have spray bombed, if the canola has not died, they know that they were using, the farmer was using Monsanto's GMO canola. If the crop has died, then they know that the farmer wasn't using Monsanto's GMO canola. This is what's going on. But then they will proceed, even if a farmer, like in my case, never signed a contract, never had nothing to do with them, they'll go into farmers' fields or canola crops that he has planted, or even soybean fields in North Dakota. And if a farmer happens to catch a Monsanto's police in his field taking seeds or plants, and I'm not scared to say it, to me they're stealing farmers' seeds or plants. And if this farmer catches them and says, "You're trespassing, get out of my field," they'll just stand there and laugh at a farmer and say, "Make us, take us to court, and we'll drag you through the court system, and you won't have a farm left time we're through with you." You can imagine how farm wives feel. I've had many, many calls from farm wives crying on the phone and say, "What do we do? We got these letters. They're into our fields." So it's really a harassment and threat. And farmers, how can farmers stand up, or anybody, to a multi-billion-dollar corporation? And to give an example of that, they know back home and in the northern states what it has cost me and my wife to stand up to Monsanto. Just my legal bills, my case is going on to 5 years, just for my lawyer, has been around $240,000 Canadian. My appeals will cost another $100,000. How we've mortgaged our home, we've mortgaged our land to pay our legal bills. Not long ago, Monsanto came after again after me, and because they confronted me at one time and said, "Nobody stands up to Monsanto, we're going to get you and we're going to destroy you." So sure enough, they laid 3 weeks later a $1 million lawsuit against me for their court costs. I had to go back to court and fight that again. And as I said before, my case now is before the Supreme Court of Canada. But can you imagine the stress on my family, on my wife, on my children, and my grandchildren when you have faced with a multi-billion-dollar corporation who have deep pockets? So that is a part that you never hear of. And I've spoken in many African, India, Bangladesh, South American, and Central American countries. And farmers there, and people tell me, if they can do this to a Canadian and American farmer, God help us. We have no chance of standing up whatsoever. Maybe in our two countries, we do have a chance. And what this Supreme Court decision will be, time will tell. Now, out of this, I think that there's two very important things that also come out, and I think it's very, very important. Any country that chooses to introduce or to bring into their country, their province, or their state GMOs. Number one, there is no such thing as containment. Believe me, after farming for a half a century, once you introduce a life-giving form into the environment, like a seed or a plant, a GMO, genetic modified organism, there is no calling back. You cannot contain it. You cannot contain the wind. And like the judge said, it doesn't matter how it gets there, and he even specified whether it's cross-pollination, direct seed movement, by wind, by birds, by bees, by flood, it doesn't matter. You cannot contain it. It's a life form And many scientists, I've asked many scientists, and many people have asked me, once if you release a life-giving form into the environment, is there a calling back? I have not been able to get an answer to that yet, because you've created something that is new, that was not there before. So there is no such thing as containment. When Monsanto would say in many countries of the world, well, we'll keep a buffer strip or so many feet, believe me, how are you going to control the wind, the bees, and so on? There is no safe distance. We had a tornado in Manitoba last year, a small one, and it took canola fields, swaths from canola fields, over 50 miles. And it went through organic farmers' fields, it went through conventional farmers' fields, and it contaminated the whole stretch that it went. Floods also will do the same thing. So there's no such thing as containment. The other very important issue is this. There is no such thing as coexistence. If you introduce GMOs into any country, as I said before, you will destroy the organic farmer and you will destroy the conventional farmer. In my particular case, my wife's an organic farmer. I'm a conventional farmer, but to a lesser degree in using of chemicals. So you will take our choice away, because you cannot have GMOs in a country, conventional or organic farmers. It's either one or the other. And believe me, because the GMO gene is the dominant gene, it takes over every plant that it gets into and makes it a GMO. Now, it doesn't only stop with that particular crop, especially with canola. And canola comes from the brassica family. And in that brassica family, it has many close cousins, turnips, radishes, and so on. It is now cross-pollinating into those particular market garden crops, destroying the choice of those people. It also is spreading now into wild cousins, like wild mustard. Again, another new problem. So it's not only the GMO crop that is brought in, it's also the other crops that are affected with that GMO crop. So my choice is gone. My organic neighbor's choice is gone. Now in Canada, we have two crops we no longer can raise organically. That's soybeans and canola. Those farmers' choice have been taken away. What about the economic issue? We in Canada now cannot sell one bushel of canola to the European Union or common market. They will not buy GMOs. So that has been, economic issue has been a tremendous, has had a tremendous impact on our farmers. And soybean farmers in North Dakota, Montana tell me the same thing. They no longer can sell any of their GMO soybeans to any country or the European common market, with a tremendous economic impact. Who has taken over those markets? In our case, because we are the largest producer of canola in the world, Australia has taken over our markets to Europe. And I believe in the case of the United States, Brazil has taken a lot of your conventional soybean markets away from you. So the economic impact has been tremendous. So again, the two things. No such thing as containment. No such thing as coexistence. Your choice is going to be gone. And that is what we found out with after 3 and 4 years. Now, we now have a major concern on the prairies. I just attended a meeting in Aberdeen, South Dakota, where people were there from Montana, North and South Dakota. We're very concerned. Monsanto has applied for regulatory approval both in the United States and Canada for the introduction of GMO wheat. If they get regulatory approval for the introduction of GMO wheat, it will destroy our wheat market in North America. And believe me, it will, because we have a 100-page document from importers, millers, processors, consumers from many, many countries, whether it's countries in Africa or Japan and other countries in Asia. They will not buy any GMO wheat. So why do we want it? What benefit did we get from it? And all we got so far is increased use of chemicals, poor quality, and less yields. So this is the war. I don't know if I should use that term. But this is what we're faced with now, GMO wheat. and Monsanto has applied for regulatory approval. There might be a little ray of hope. On the 5th of December, in Canada, the Supreme Court, there was another case, and some of you might be aware of it, was the Harvard mouse case, where Harvard University was able to patent a mouse in the United States. They got approval from Washington to patent a mouse that they invented, this Harvard mouse, which they could use more for cancer research. They then came to Canada and wanted to patent the mouse in Canada that they invented this mouse. And the Supreme Court, it was a close decision, stated they could not patent a life form in Canada, a higher life form, which means any seed plant, any human being, animal, insect, any life form, and basically a best way to describe that would be anything that comes from a seed, you cannot patent that in Canada. So that's one ray of hope in my case, also in the case for the wheat growers, that they will not be able to patent a wheat or a life form. Now, the Supreme Court in Canada made two distinctions. They made a distinction between a higher life form and a lower life form. And the higher life form would be anything that comes from a seed that can reproduce itself without man's help or nature. And a lower life form would be like a yeast, a bacteria, a fungus, algae, or something like that. That would be a lower life form, and you can patent that. But a higher life form, under the patent laws of Canada, you cannot get a patent on it. And that went against the grain of the world, because the United States allowed it, Japan has allowed it, and three or four countries in Europe have allowed the patenting of life forms. So, in closing, here are some of the things to look at. Control, to me, the control over people. And I've gone and talked to many, many people in African nations, in Bangladesh, India, and as I mentioned, South and Central America, all over the world. And I've told farmers this: never, never give up your right to use your own seed. Fight and fight hard, always to maintain that. Because as a farmer, for half a century myself, I know that if you take away from a farmer the ability to use his own seed, you will stop the future development of new seeds and plants, adaptable to soil and climatic condition. If a company comes out with a seed or plant that's good for Vermont, it's not saying it's going to be good in Montana or Saskatchewan. Soil and climatic conditions are different. So you will stop all the new and future development of seeds and plants, which is very, very important. Also, what happens if you're down to one or two varieties of any seeds or plants, and you get a disease or some disaster into those seeds and plants? You've got nothing to fall back on, because already all your other crops are contaminated. That's a very, very important issue. The stopping of future development of seeds and plants. And what happens if you get a disease or blight into a particular grain or seed? You again have nothing to go back onto. So those are some of the things that have happened and are happening with the introduction of GMOs. Again, poor yields, increased input costs, and also poor quality. And what about the environmental damage? What is it doing to our birds, our animals, our fish, and so on? What is it doing to human beings? You have very, very little studies on the effects of eating GMO foods in North America. Both our countries, very, very little money goes to research in regards to the dangers of eating GMO foods. A lot of money is going to research on that in Europe. And many times we have accused, both our countries have accused Europeans and saying, well, the reason you don't want GMO foods imported into your country is because you want to protect your own farming industry, or so on, and they're just fear mongers. But believe me, I've spent a lot of time in Europe. Europeans look at food a different way than we as North Americans. They look at food as a culture, a way of life. They want good food, they want safe food, and they went through two world wars where they nearly starved to death. and food is a priority. Many of our young people today feel that food comes from a supermarket. So it was not because they wanted to protect their own industry or they were fearmongers. They wanted good and safe food, and that is the reason. So those are some of the messages I wanted to bring you tonight. And as I told many other farmers in the world, never give up that right. Because if you do, you'll just become like serfs of the land and you're back to a feudal system. What is the difference to an African nation when they were colonized years ago by foreign powers from Europe? What is the difference to them now if they're colonized in the control of their seed and their food supply by a foreign nation? I have time, but I'd like to say one thing, what I've seen in India. I was at a seed symposium in Bangalore in southern India where farmers were complaining to the government about, with the introduction of certain GMOs, how they were growing plants or seeding or seeds and plants, raising plants that they were not traditional to their area. And they had poor crops and they couldn't pay the money lenders. They couldn't pay the multinationals for the seed and for the plants. And they would come up, and first of all, the women would come up on stage and say how their husbands had committed suicide. Children would come up and say how their parents committed suicide. There's about 18,000 now in India alone that have committed suicide. But worst of all is when men would come up and they would lift their gown and show incisions on their side where they sold a kidney to pay off a moneylender. And I tell you, that's hard to take. When you see that with the introduction and how it can control the lives of people with the introduction of GMOs and when you have contracts like that, and even if you don't have a contract like that. In closing, Monsanto made it. Mine was a test case. My wife and I, at that time, took a stand that we're going to stand up to them because we felt that farmers and ourselves should never lose the right to use our own seed. And I have, you know, and I think back, my wife and I say this. If we don't stand up, my wife is 71 and I'm 72. And if we don't stand up to them, what kind of a legacy do we want to leave to our children and to our grandchildren? A legacy of land and food with poisons? No. We want to leave a legacy of land, food, air, and so on, and rivers, water, without poisons. That's why we're standing up to Monsanto. Nobody should take the rights of farmers away to use their own seed. We don't know how many good years we got left. But the good years that my wife and I have left, we're going to go down fighting Monsanto, always for the rights of farmers, and we'll go down fighting.